Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? Wow. I haven't opened a show with that phrase in a long time. Used to be standard. Then I started doing some cold openers and it sort of got lost. But it's pretty much true, isn't it? Most of us would love to hear our name buried in cheers and applause. Luckily, there are services out there who will do that. For a price, they'll meet you at the airport or somewhere with a gang of paid fans snapping flash pictures and shoving autograph books in your face as they call your name. It's kind of tough to wrap your head around the person who would pay for that, but then I did know a guy who had an old pinball machine and he'd rigged it so he could not lose. Fucking weird, huh? I worked for a huge media company that merged with another one, and they had a ridiculous off-site love fest down in Florida. It was supposed to be a big kumbaya moment where all these execs would get to know one another and bond and create synergy. It was idiotic. When we got off the plane, they actually had a squad of fake paparazzi and autograph hounds swarming us. It was like an out-of-body experience. Corporate America is 95% waste and bullshit, but this was beyond the pale. Maybe you do some goofy shit like that to schmooze a client, but for your own execs? While it was happening, I flashed on Sonny Corleone at his sister's wedding, where he gets pissed off at the newspaper photographers and smashes one's camera on the pavement, and then throws a few bills at him to buy a new one. It would have been fun to replicate Sonny's performance, but I needed the job, so it stayed inside my head. I guess social media has mostly replaced that service. That, of course, is free. People can post all the fake glamour shots they want, put on their glad rags and pose in front of Bentleys and Lambos and Gulfstream jets, other people's Bentleys and Lambos and Gulfstream jets, live in large. Then when they go home to the apartment, pop a Hungry Man frozen dinner in the nuker, settle in for another glamorous night of Netflix. Our culture is obsessed with celebrity as never before. Pre-social media, there were only two sides to the equation, right? Real celebrities and fans. Now, everyone can be a celebrity. You can buy Twitter followers and Facebook friends. You can post videos everywhere. You can do a podcast. They estimate there are about 600,000 podcasts out there. Most of them run for less than 5 episodes. And millions of people want to be the next PewDiePie or Joe Rogan. But that involves work. Lots and lots of work. But work is not the price of entry to celebrity. It really isn't. Not anymore. I saw a fascinating documentary about e-celebrity. It's called Jawline. It chronicles a kid in rural Tennessee as he has a brush with internet fame. He's a nice-looking kid, personable, not real articulate, so he just live streams himself saying, "What's up?" and dispensing positivity. Stuff like, "You be you," and "Don't give up," and "Follow your dream," and so on. There's no small irony in a kid that's not yet shaving giving life advice. To his credit, he always stays on message, nothing ever negative, controversial, or remotely self-revelatory. Somehow he manages to cum an audience. He develops a following of mostly teen and tween girls, and somehow he gets noticed by some promoter, who's maybe 22, who manages a successful pair of e-celebs. And he gets booked on a small tour with these guys. And I'm wondering, well, what will they do on tour, huh? Musicians tour, stage plays and musicals tour, dancers tour, acrobats tour, even poets and authors tour. But every one of these categories perform. They sing, dance, play an instrument. They do something. They entertain. But that wasn't the case for these e-celebs. They just showed up on a stage and looked cute. Like safe, non-threatening, pretend boyfriends for lonely young girls. There have always been teen idols, but they used to have to do something, had to have some measure of talent beyond just looking cute. Going back many, many decades, huh? Guys like Fabian or Frankie Avalon, Bobby Sherman, David Cassidy, Rick Springfield, even the Damn Monkees, a band manufactured by a TV network. Some of those guys could actually play their instruments and perform. And right through NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, One Direction, Jonas Brothers, or Bieber, like them or not, they are all indisputably polished, professional entertainers. But watching Jawline, I realized that now, as in no other time in history, people are famous for nothing more than being famous. Talent is not only optional, it seems to be unnecessary. There's this weird, weird scene where this kid, his name is Austin, he has a meetup at a mall with some of his fans, and maybe, I don't know, 8 or 10 girls show up to greet him as if he is Justin Bieber or some global superstar. They follow him around for a while, taking selfies with him and hugging and rolling video on his every move. And the in-person Austin is pretty much the same as the digital Austin. Lots of "what's up" and positivity. Then, in a real-time microcosm of familiarity breeding contempt, a couple of these girls begin to issue him commands that he cavort like a circus animal. One demands that he climb aboard some motorized and wheeled stuffed toy. When Austin refuses, she hands him a few bucks, and then he acquiesces. He sits on the toy. He rolls along that white-tiled floor, past Payless and Forever 21, as she points her iPhone at his back. Very, very weird. I don't think conventional celebs do that or ever have done that. Can you recall seeing any videos of Elvis or the Beatles or Sinatra accepting tips for stunts? The director, who's getting lots of kudos from Sundance and critics, did a great job because there's no narration. It's cinema verite, I suppose. But she did miss a crucial scene that many directors miss, the denouement. Real celebrities, managed by people who know what they're doing, severely limit access, proximity, and time with their clients. They know the single most important rule of successful entertainers is always leave them wanting more. But Austin, being 16, knows nothing of this. He just hangs around as long as they want until finally they start to disappear. One girl demands his cell phone number and that he text it to her. When he asks her name, she's clearly angry that he doesn't know it already. That's about where this scene ends. It would have been so much better to have let that camera linger, to watch as Austin's fangirls trickled away and returned to their lives, leaving Austin alone in a mall with canned music and lifeless mannequins looking back at him from shop windows. What was it like when he left the mall and got on a city bus back home and no one recognized him or even smiled at him? To me, those denouements are often more fascinating than the beginning or middle or even climax. I first became aware of this at an office party in New York. It was some dude's birthday, and somebody got the bright idea of hiring a stripper to sing happy birthday to him. So there was a happy birthday stripogram website featuring several chicks who looked very hot and pointy, and one in particular was exemplary, and her selection was unanimous. The call was made, the credit card number was given, and we were assured she'd be there momentarily. The woman who showed up may have been the older cousin of the one on the webpage. I wondered if she caught the disappointment on several faces. I kind of hoped not. She very quickly got to work. She asked who the birthday boy was, smiled at him, pulled a small boombox from her duffel bag. She pressed play, and soon the classic The Stripper filled the office through the tinny speakers of her device. She was a reasonably good dancer, and she never met anyone's eyes but the birthday guy's. Pretty soon she was down to her heels, garter belt, G-string, and half-cup bra as she bumped and twerked to the burlesque classic. She never really got naked. The big moment was when she fished in her duffel bag and came out with a can of Ready Whip and a Bic lighter. She sprayed whipped cream on her boobs, then stuck two candles in each mound and lit them up. Then the music segued from The Stripper to Happy Birthday, and everybody sang Happy Birthday to Vic. Then she got close to Vic and invited him to blow out the candles. I don't remember if he closed his eyes and made a wish. The smoke from the extinguished candles had barely risen before she punched the stop button on the boombox and stuffed it back in the duffel. Then she moved into a corner where she climbed back into her street clothes. It struck me how she was comfortable taking off her clothes in plain sight, but while putting them back on, she wanted some privacy. She kept her back to everyone. My guess was that until Vic blew out those candles, she was working and in character. The moment the show was over, she was back in reality. A reality she didn't much like. In seconds, the heels were replaced by sneakers, the lingerie was covered by baggy sweats, and over that went a trench coat. She slipped through the door and down the hall like a wraith. Watching her dress was one of the most intense displays of what, pathos, I guess, I've ever seen. I wasn't the only one affected. There were probably maybe a dozen people in that office, men and women, but nobody said a word. Everyone just kind of slunk off to their respective offices. We were up on the 15th floor, and for no particular reason, I moved to a window and looked down at the street. It was late autumn, just about dusk, and it started to rain. The neon of the Radio City marquee splashed the shiny wet pavement with electric red. And then I spotted her, hurrying across 6th Avenue. She pulled her collar up against the rain. She looked just like any other woman heading home after a day at the office. She walked down the subway steps and was gone. She'd had a moment of celebrity, I suppose. And somehow it was more dignified than Austin, the e-celeb. Nobody demanded she perform any extras for a tip. Nobody demanded her cell number. And she did perform. She had an act. She entertained. She didn't just show up and look cute. For those who really crave that celebrity experience, I checked and there's an outfit called Famous for a Day. Well, that name is quite honest. Maybe somebody could have come up with something better. Something without the for a day phrase. Is a day ever enough for anything? A one-day vacation is a cruel tease. Who wants to be reminded up front that the dream, even the synthetic manifestation of the dream, is fleeting? So maybe Famous for a Day should be called Fame on Demand or Celebrity Spotlight, something like that. Who wants to be on that Cinderella clock, huh? Maybe Famous for a Day should be a mandatory experience for anyone seeking fame. You have to go through it before you get admitted to SAG or the Musicians Union. Because if you do make it big, how do you handle it when the cheering stops? Whether for an evening, when you leave the arena, or forever, if your popularity wanes. Famous for a Day's website is just mesmerizing because it gives tremendous insight into our bizarre, celebrity-obsessed culture. Listen to their pitch. Famous for a Day is the top service for making the dream of stardom feel like reality. With us, you can experience what it's like to be the sought-after center of attention, flashbulbs sparkling at your every pause or smile, the press begging for a personal quote or your views on life. You can hire our personal paparazzi to follow you around, documenting your every move. Rent our reporters to make you stand out in a crowd. You'll be bigger than life, and even passers-by will know you're something special. We supply the press and hype. You decide how you want to spend your newfound fake fame. Have some fun, make some memories, and then leave it all behind at the end of the day. After all, you don't want the paparazzi going through your personal trash to see how much you pay a month in rent. Wow. Just wow. Turns out celebs do have a higher suicide rate. And it's not just movie and rock stars. Anthony Bourdain, Kate Spade, the designer. People with success, money, and everything to live for. Hard to fathom those. And curiously, when a celebrity kills himself, there's often a commensurate spike in suicides among the general public. What's behind that? But is Famous for a Day all that silly? Don't we indulge in fakery all the time? And though we're not paying for it, there's a minimal payoff. We say God bless you to strangers, send birthday cards to coworkers and relatives we hate. Sometimes we say thank you to the surly waiter and tip for shit service. Every day we shave and shower and show up for work, and for many of us, we'd rather fling a Molotov through the front window. Might be interesting to keep a journal, just for a week or even a day, and note every time we do or say fake stuff. So what price fame? Think of all the insane shit done in the pursuit of celebrity. People used to sit on flagpoles or gobble goldfish. Now they shoot up schools or shopping malls. We live in very strange times. And one of the strangest aspects of these times is how often the phrase civil war is being used of late online and in broadcast media. Many say we're already well into a cold civil war, and it's only a matter of time before it turns hot and bullets fly. Can that happen? And if it did, what would it be like? We'll take a good look at that possibility in a new bonus episode dropping that gives a take you've not heard before. You can get it at patreon.com/thatlarryshow. Along with dozens of other bonus episodes. Sorry for my congested head and froggy voice. This damn cold seems unshakable. So I'm going to go medicate. You can follow the show on Twitter and Facebook. Just plug That Larry Show into those search bars. You'll find it. And stop by the show page at thatlarryshow.com for 218 other episodes, plus additional content and commentary. I will see you soon. And until that time, please cover your coughs and sneezes and take no shit.